Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight is kind of a special program. Mr. Batson is off teaching children about animals and giving a big old speech. So tonight I've agreed to host the program in his absence. But as usual, we have Dr. Henry Day with us here tonight. But special guest for a return performance is Mr. Billy Sandifer. He is a gentleman that's been on our program before. He's from South Padre Island. He's going to talk to us tonight about sharks. And hopefully we can get some information from him about the Ridley sea turtle work that he's doing down there. Handling tonight's technical responsibilities is Wayne Larson. And Jim Johnson, as always, handles our music. And from the Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, we have Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Mr. Day. How are you doing?
Good evening, Melissa. How are you?
Oh, I'm just peachy keen. I'm a little nervous, and I hope I don't destroy this whole thing for Larry and you.
Oh, it'll be fine. We've got Billy on tonight, and he never is at a loss for words.
No.
So our show should slip right along.
Yep, it really should. So the following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguide.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES 4140 North 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135, shipping and handling included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Day with the Wild World News. Now, we have some good news tonight. We have a new discovery. We're heading off to Great Basin National Park in Utah. A new species of freshwater shrimp has been discovered at the national park. The white pine amphipod was found at the bottom of a deep cave in the park. The amphipod genus is eyeless, white, and lives in underground waterways. A little tiny brand new shrimp discovered.
Ooh. We like our new animals.
Yeah, that's right. And it's pretty exciting because these eyeless, blind little shrimp, for the first time, you know, the public has, the scientists have discovered them. And, of course, they supply food for other creatures that live there. Most of the creatures that live in the bottom of caves are blind and colorless.
Hmm.
But it is an exciting new discovery.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. We're going to head off to Montana. Now, there's an alarm clock going off all across the United States and Canada. It's the Beware of the Bear alarm. Now, in Glacier National Park, visitors are being warned that bears are emerging from their dens. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Grizzly Bear Management Specialist Tim Manley says that a tracking collar activated on March 15th shows a female grizzly with her cub is now active and moving around. So, bear beware.
Wow. That's kind of early.
Well, it is kind of early, but the weather has warmed up a little bit, and, well, you know, you've heard of global warming.
Yeah,
and the bears are ready to go.
All right.
Now, Melissa, are you familiar with the group Counting Crows?
Yes, I am.
Well, there's a new group in southern Florida, and they call themselves Counting Snakes. West Palm Beach, Florida. pythons appear to be prospering in the Everglades despite winter freezes and a lack of rain. Now, 26 pythons have been captured this year, and the South Florida Management District removed 6 pythons from the Everglades this last week. Now, due to the hurricane that accidentally released a bunch of constricting snakes, that, like the Burmese python, they're the top predators known to prey on more than 20 native Florida species.
Wow.
Which includes other snakes, alligators, birds, anything that moves.
Well, this is actually pretty interesting news because I was under the impression that they thought that the cold weather was going to kill off that python. So,
well, they did kill off a lot of the pythons, but apparently it did very little damage.
Oh. All right.
Well, Melissa, we're going to head off to God's country. And where would Mr. Batson call God's country?
Colorado.
That's right. We're heading off to Colorado Springs. Now, folks, we need a little help here. A rare tortoise has disappeared from the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, and authorities think that he may have been stolen. Now, zookeepers last saw 13-year-old Beauty, B-U-T-T-I, Beauty, Monday in the loft, a hands-on educational exhibit. Now, Beauty is about the size of a grapefruit and weighs about a pound. Now, zookeepers are worried because he has a history of an upper respiratory infections. Now, if anybody knows where Beauty's whereabouts might be, you might convince whoever accidentally picked up Beauty to return him to the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo so that he can get his medication.
Yes, please do so. That poor little animal needs his medication.
He does need his medication. We don't want anything happening to him. So if you know anything about it, please contact the zoo.
Yep.
All right, we're heading off to Texas, Melissa. When you're fishing in the ocean, you never know what you're going to catch. Well, Freeport, Texas, an 8-foot, 375-pound mako shark was a surprise catch of the day for Jackson Kreese.
Wow.
He told the Associated Press it was unreal to see the shark jump into his 25-foot boat. Now, he and two crewmen were fishing for red snapper. He said he had dumped some fish guts into the water, which sent the sharks into a frenzy. Now, that's what we call chumming.
Right.
And Captain Billy can tell us about chumming. Now, generally, when you're fishing for red snapper, you don't have to chum, but that's probably why the shark jumped into his boat.
Sometimes you get guys that want to catch a red snapper on a fly rod, which you can do, by the way. You can chum them up from the bottom to the top with small pieces of meat. And so that could very well have been what it was. But I know of several occurrences of that happening, and it's not what you want.
No, it's not.
Mako is the closest thing to the great white and the closest kin in the ocean, and he's just not your friend.
No.
All right, Billy, you can probably, Captain Billy, you can answer me this question. A pelican can hold more in his beak than his?
So what?
A pelican, his beak can hold more than his?
Bellican.
That's right. We're heading off to South Bend, Indiana. Now, Indiana Dunes State Park naturalist Brad Baumgartner said that white pelicans have shown up progressively in larger numbers in the state over the past decade. He said the normal migration route tends to cut through southern Illinois, but has moved to the east for some reason. Now, the pelicans have been spotted recently here in Indiana near Morocco, Rochester, and North Liberty. Pretty rare event to see a pelican in Indiana.
Wow, yeah.
Well, I got one for you. Down here in the northern Laguna Madre, about 15 miles from my house, is the only known northern hemisphere saltwater breeding colony of white pelicans. Every other one that they know of on the planet breeds on fresh water. And these guys breed in the bay on salt water.
Well, that's pretty
interesting.
How's
that for a trick? You know, you get me and you together, and we can just throw it at them from all angles, can't we?
Well, we'll just have to talk to Mr. Batson about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, here's a story for you. It's been in the news all week. Start spreading the news. Heading off to New York. A poisonous cobra has vanished from an enclosure at the Bronx Zoo, and its reptile house remained closed as a precaution while zoo workers searched for the missing reptile. Now, luckily, the cobra was caught this morning at 9 o'clock. But while it was on the loose, like a true New Yorker, the escaped Bronx Zoo cobra appeared to be angling for fame. Missing since last Friday, the slippery serpent has supposedly begun posting updates on Twitter about its adventures under the name Bronx Zoo Cobra. And now it says eating.
Y'all had a long winter, had you?
That's right. It says it was eating a cupcake at the Magnolia Bakery. The cobra allegedly tweeted Tuesday afternoon, "This is going straight to my hips. Oh, wait, I don't have hips." And then the cobra seemed to be headed from the Bronx to Manhattan, leaving another tweet, "Leaving Wall Street, these guys make my skin crawl." So while the snake was actually still in the reptile house at the Bronx Zoo, he was tweeting all over New York City.
Well, I'll be darned.
But he was captured and everything's fine. All right, we're heading off to Anchorage, Alaska. Inupiat Eskimo villagers in the Chukchi Sioux village rely on wild animals to survive, but beavers have colonized the main source of water, now creating a health concern. The beaver's feces often carry a microscopic protozoa that can cause all types of bad effects and diseases. Villagers and hunters in the village are warned of boil or water before drinking it.
Wow. Yeah. Them beaver dams can really cause issues. I know that, but you're not supposed to do anything to them, right?
Well, that just depends on where they are and what they're doing.
Yeah.
We reported a few weeks ago that they had taken over a golf course and were destroying the trees and stuff, so they trapped and removed the beavers and... Just depends on what's going on and how many beavers you got. There's one of the largest beaver dams in the world. It can be seen from space in Canada. So you can imagine what kind of damage they can do.
My God.
Unreal.
That's right. All right. Our news is running a little long tonight, so we're going to finish up with an interesting story from Barkhamsted, Connecticut. An invasive species of river algae, commonly known as, listen to this, Captain Billy, rock snot, became because of its shininess, has been found in the state for the first time. Now, rock snot. The Department of Environmental Protection says that the algae, commonly known as Didymo, was found by fishermen in the Farmington River. So we got a problem with rock snot now.
Ew.
You know, that's why I turned down a chance to be a marine biologist, was because I did not want to study different subspecies of sea snot. That's a true story. I'd rather choose my own species of study. Since nobody's paying me anyway.
Well, is that all you got tonight for the Wild World News, Dr. Day?
I think after that last rocks not story, Melissa, I think we better end it right there.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's probably kids all across this country listening to the show going, ew. Well, I got a happy little announcement to make. We do have waiting on the line Mr. Larry Batson. Larry, are you there? Well, he's there, but he's not talking. Larry.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Batson.
I was listening to the show.
Oh.
On my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
Gosh, how did you guys know that?
We're just enjoying the show. Oh, well, that's good.
You got any snot where you are?
No, I just came from Seymour, Indiana. It's pretty much full of snot.
All right.
Time of year.
It's the time of year.
Okay, we're going to get moving along then. Dr. Day's Wild World News, of course, is brought to you by McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of the Rocky Mountain National Park, God's country. Go to their website, and that is at info@mcgregormountainlodge.com. Also, Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, 101,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. Unbelievable. Fantastic fishing, amazing golf. Go to their website, www.santeecooper.org. And those are the underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Shadows.
We are abruptly back. With us tonight, as we've discussed before, is Mr. Billy Sandifer. Mr. Sandifer is down in South Padre Island, Texas.
North Padre.
What a beautiful place to be.
Yes, well, ma'am, it is at that.
Welcome, Mr. Sandifer. How are you doing tonight?
Well, thank you, but I'm concerned about Doc. Because Doc, if he's got any entrepreneurial spirit about him, he could be missing out on something here. I see a whole group of clothing and apparel and koozies and stuff. Got snot. Huh? I mean,
I
this could
right,
be the
Captain
new
Billy.
Wave. Huh?
I think we might have started something tonight.
I mean, I can see it. Ball caps, visors. Oh, yeah. It's all over. Well, we had our 16th annual Captain Billy Sandifer Big Shell cleanup, the 19th, and 501 warm, wonderful human beings showed up and picked up 44 tons of trash off of 10 miles of beach, which means that we now have a grand total of 2,019,080 pounds of trash that we've removed off that national seashore.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, I was reading about that on your website, actually.
And some of the people are pooping out, you know, just plain out old maturity, but I keep seeing these new smiling faces there filling in, and I think this thing's going to last a long time. I know of about 6 or 7 other similar events that have started because of it, because I have gave what small amount of tutorage I can to the individuals who started it, and that's a nice thing.
Well, it's important to take care of our beaches.
Hey, you know, when you post junk on the internet and all this, on these message boards, they all got some little saying like, have you eat your gopher today or something, you know? And I always put, if we don't leave any, there won't be any.
Right.
And that's it. From the, be it trash or be it fisheries or whatever.
Right.
There won't be any if we don't leave any.
You know. Yeah. You know, speaking of trash, here recently, you know, this was past year at some point, they had the huge BP oil spill there in the Gulf.
They most certainly did.
Yeah. And I know that prior to that oil spill, Larry had a guest on, and she was discussing the Ridley Sea Turtle and how it was doing pretty good. And I know that you work with the Ridley Sea Turtle as well. What is this oil spill doing? Or has it had an impact?
I don't think so, because most of those turtles were pooping around. There is actually a website. Some of those turtles have transmitters on them.
Uh-huh.
And you can go on the website and see where they are.
Really?
And most of them got to about the mouth of the Rio Grande and said, or the mouth of the Mississippi and said, whoa, and just stopped. And so I think maybe we're okay with that. I am more concerned about the fact that that thing was right dead in the middle of where the giant bluefin tuna spawn. And that is a real biggie, since that's the most economically valuable fish on the planet. And they're getting pretty good numbers on the turtles. Their major nesting area is a 12-mile beach in Mexico called Nueva Fortuna. And this is a secondary, very small population of them. But it's kind of a backup, you know, instead of having all your eggs in one nest.
Right.
Well, and so.
Well, at what point will they know if there has actually been an impact on, you know, animals like the Ridley Sea Turtle or the bluefin tuna? Or
I'm going to tell you the truth, kid. It could be 20 years before they know what they've done.
No kidding.
Or longer.
But by that
because
time
they keep, every now and then, you know how on the news you'll hear about this orange growth on some sea coral that they found? And then just this past week, a bunch of surface oil popped back up.
Oh.
And this is long-term stuff. And there's nothing, there's no way that anyone on this planet right now can tell what the effects of that will be long-term.
Well, if they won't know, you know, numbers for 20 years, how do we possibly stop the impact that this, you know, the full impact that this could have? Is there a way to stop it, or do we just have to do
it? I don't see it.
Wait?
I don't see it. I don't see anything we can do but be reactive. I don't see any way we can be active.
And do you think they are?
I think they got enough heat on them. They probably are. I'm glad they got enough heat on them that they're doing something anyway. But everybody wants oil, but everybody wants a place to live too.
Right.
And you know, there's nothing wrong with the oil industry. God bless them. But they have all the technology in the world to do it right without screwing it up.
Well, see, that's kind of the double-edged sword here. You know, is that, you know, humans need to be able to heat their homes and put gas in their vehicles.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
You know, but at the same point, I mean, how much of an impact are we as a species having on the rest of what we call our planet?
Tremendous.
Yeah.
You know, there it says there, I'm a heathen, I'm a part Choctaw Indian, but I've read the White Man's Bible several times. And it says there in Genesis, and God gave man dominion over the beasts of the field and the fowl of the air and the fishes of the sea. And to me, that means nothing in the world but stewardship.
Yep.
I can't see any other way to read that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, here it is, and it's a pretty good deal. Now, screw it up. Don't come to me over it.
Right.
And so we've got choices to make. I ain't got no kids. Y'all got kids. You got to decide what you want for them.
Right.
And that's a true story.
Are they putting warnings up about the water and stuff? You know, the ocean.
Oh no! Actually, down our island, I was afraid when the winter current turned over that we would get some of it. We have not. We got none of it at all yet. And so maybe we won't. But there's a whole lot of distance between here and there, and a whole lot of water.
Well, isn't there a lot of talk about oil that has possibly sunk to the bottom?
And the intermediate levels as well, and that's
right.
The scariest part of all.
So now where exactly would that oil drift to?
Anywhere it wanted to.
Really?
Because you've got currents running into currents, running against currents. There's all kinds of ocean currents. And some of them are short. Some of them are caused by temperature change. And some of them run long distances. Some of them run short distances. And unless you had a satellite photo for every 30 seconds and somebody just watching stuff all the time, you couldn't tell nothing.
Wow.
And so I write for a Texas saltwater fishing publication that's quite conservation and order called Texas Saltwater Fishing Magazine, and we keep trying to push this at them, you know, is that you got to look at the long term. You can't just look at today. We're clear-cutting the timber. And the economy is directly tied to the resource, because the resource is what brings the economy to the coastal areas.
Right.
So if we don't have any fisheries and stuff, there goes our revenue. So it doesn't matter if you're an avid outdoorsman or if you're just a bean counter. It affects all of us.
That's absolutely right.
It affects the quality of our lives.
Yep.
They asked Jacques Cousteau late in his life, they said, Mr. Cousteau, you said all your life that the sea was already to the point it was going to die and there's nothing we can do about it. And he said, now, you claim to be a creature of the sea. What are you going to do when the seas die? And he said, I'm going to die too. But what you don't realize is so are you, because that's what makes this planet go around.
Yeah.
Ocean currents are one of the most important things on the planet. Now, you had some personal interest in sharks. I know you did, because Larry asked me. So what do you want to know about sharks?
Well, why don't don't we go ahead and take a quick break and do some PSAs.
Okay.
And make some sponsors happy. But I'm kind of glad that you brought up all that about this earth and we need to take care of it, because I think it gives our listeners a little something to think about while we go to this short break. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Babson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you can prevent wildfires.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
It's Bobcat heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Welcome back to Larry Babson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Babson.
Welcome back. You are listening to Larry Babson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget next week, folks, to tune on in, because we're going to have a returning guest also. His name is David Klinger. He's a writer with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And while we're at it, we'd also like to thank Peter and Kathy Weimer of We Want You Cottages. Visit today this fantastic resort on the banks of Chautauqua Lake. And their addition to their website, iKids Fishing. That great website promotes getting youngsters interested in the fantastic sport of fishing. Visit their website at www.wewantyou.com. Also, Radio Mom FM. And the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, even 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And listen to Larry's show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at Radio Mom FM. Also, we'd like to thank Tire Service Plus and the owner, Jerry Jones, for taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal trucks on the road, traveling thousands of miles, and Larry is traveling around a lot with those animals, and keeping them on the road, and they're goodwill ambassadors. Call them at 317-243-0700. Now back to our program. Tonight we are talking to Mr. Billy Sandifer down in North Padre Island, Texas. How
you
doing? Now you brought up a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and probably not one that's real special to a lot of people, and that's the issue of sharks. I love sharks. I can't even imagine what this world would be like without them. You know what I mean? And they're a fantastic animal.
Well, they're almost a perfect creation.
Well,
they're for what they're intended to do.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
A perfect creation.
They really are. My favorite line in any movie was when Clint from Jaws says, you know, they swim and they eat and they make little baby sharks, and that's all they do.
The one I like is when a cop said, you're going to need a bigger boat. Well, let me tell you what's happening, and most people don't realize it. And I got Associated Press down here to do an article about it in the last few months. But they are gill netting, which is against the law, and finning sharks out of Mexico. They're Mexican 25-foot boats. They run up here into our Texas waters, directly offshore where I fish, and they cut the fins off these sharks for shark's fin soup. And then they throw the shark back in the water to rot.
Oh.
And this is against the law, NATO treaty. But when did an itinerant Mexican fisherman ever care about NATO treaty? And there is very little enforcement, as I'm sure the man from Fish and Wildlife will be glad to tell you next week, or Fish and Game. But if anybody wants to really know anything about it, if you just get on your computer and type in a search for Mexican shark fishing blood treasure, it'll freak you out. Those guys have already killed so many sharks down off of Mexico in the Gulf that now they're coming up here and killing them at night and going back down there. And you know what? That Mexican's making $15 a day. Living in a cardboard hut on a windy, sand-blown beach with no fresh water and no toilet facilities or anything, and he's making $15 a day. There ought to be a way we can beat that somehow. And I noticed one of the things that broke my heart was that one of the old pescadores, one of the old shark men, was complaining about the size of the average shark they're catching in Texas is decreasing.
Really?
And so, you know, I don't care how many times they write Jaws. I think shark, we kill 11 million sharks to every one that kills one of us.
Well, you know, I mean, sharks have a purpose in the ocean, and without the shark, it's going to set off the balance. I mean, it's just like any land animal.
It's a little more important than that, because in the ocean, you can get away messing with the middleweights. The benthic community, which is the bottom of the food chain, the little bitty guys, the invertebrates and everybody, you cannot mess them up. You've got to leave them alone. And the apex predators, you've got to leave them alone, or the entire system will fall flat on its face. And since 1983 until now, they say there's 25% or less of the sharks, tunas, and billfish left in the sea between the 80s and now. And it's all overfishing. It's not climatic change or this or that or the other. It's just us greedy.
Right. Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but oftentimes during this, what they call finning, and for those of you that are listening and you don't know what we're talking about, it's a practice where they just take the fins off of a shark, and they use it for a meal called shark fin soup. But correct me if I'm wrong, Billy, but don't they they take the shark out of the water, they cut the fins off, and at times these animals are still alive.
They are still alive, and then they dump him back in the water to drown.
Yep.
Because he can't swim without his fins, and he can't breathe without swimming. His air bladder won't do him. He's got to keep moving in order to survive. And so it's just a slow, hideous death. And, you know, all of this is so that as an aphrodisiac for the Orientals, and I haven't read in any newspaper articles lately that they were short a whole lot of Orientals. And so I don't know what we do. Import the little blue pill, do what? But I know this doesn't make any sense. And someday we're going to want to sit in the shade in the middle of the day, and there ain't going to be a tree around.
Right.
And everybody's going to say, where's the trees? And we're going to say, we cut them.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is.
Well, you know, in a situation like this off the coast, if it's Mexican nationals coming into American waters,
mm-hmm.
who is responsible for patrolling those waters? Is it the
U.S. Coast Guard?
It is.
Yeah. And as soon as they see them on our side of the demarcation line, they give chase. And then when they reach the water boundary line, the Mexican gives him the middle finger and goes home. And the Coast Guard has no authority to follow him. Actually, it shows what I'm doing it in that I mentioned to you, that blood treasure, Mexico's fishing for sharks, shark fishing. So we've got now Texas has implemented some much more stringent sport fishing regulations on our sharks. And you can't keep near as many. Well, you can keep one apiece, and he has to be at least 24 inches long. Some species are protected. We're trying to do something about this, but my goodness, hon, what good does it do if we're making it hard on the old boys with a rod and reel, but we got guys out there with hundreds of miles of gillnet?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's the same thing we always come down to, is how do you enforce the border between the United States and Mexico? And I guess it's going to increase now to the waters as well.
30-06 worked real well. Did for years. I still got one here, an OM-1 Garand. It'll work right on out there.
Well, just one question, Billy. Do you know how many species of shark are in the Gulf?
I know a 19 species caught off of Padre Island.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Do they have great whites that come into the Gulf?
There was one winter I saw a great white about 13 feet long over a two-week period, and it was in February, and our water temperature was 54, and that's the type water temperature that they prefer. And also that's when our older dolphin tend to die off, and so that's a setup deal. That's why they would be in there. And it was so cool because I knew exactly what he was, big old plain old sucker. And I got on top of my truck with the binoculars, and I was watching him. And about every 75 yards, he looked like a cartoon character. He'd stick his head up out of the water and look in every direction.
Wow.
And I go, what's up with this? Well, he was looking for rolling dolphin. And then later on, as Shark Week got more and more elaborate with and gained so much more research than was previously known about those fish, they found that was one of their little idiosyncrasies that they use regularly hunting. But we have all the nice guys. We have the bull sharks, the tiger sharks, the greater hammers.
Hmm.
They're the majority of my work. I won't let my customers kill a shark except a black tip, which is common, medium size, and not in trouble from the finners. And the rest of them, we tag them, put a National Marine Fishery tag in them. I'll take your picture and put you on the internet and make you famous, and we pat her on the backside and let her go. So the days of killing them is over. And a little late coming, I'm afraid.
Now, in your experience, and I hate to ask a question like this because I hate to make the shark sound bad, but in your experience, what do you think in that area is probably the one type of shark that has the most run-ins with people?
The shark I'm most concerned with is the one that's right behind me and gaining ground quickly. And I think I would have to, the only one that ever hit me was a bull.
Really?
Yes, and that's the one that Shark Week says is the most dangerous fish in the sea, and I've been doing some research with scientific institutes lately over bull sharks. And the bull shark is the only fish I ever release that I wonder if I'm doing the right thing.
Really?
Because it's unusual, because fish have attitudes as individuals and as species. And bull sharks are mean. They're mean.
Yeah.
They're hateful.
Yeah.
And a tiger shark, you know, everybody's scared to death of a tiger shark. He's like a big old puppy when you get him up on the bank. And but a bull shark isn't. He wants to hurt you. And I did have one did a pretty good job of hurting me. But it's real simple. They've been there for 300 million years. I'm not going to get in a territorial dispute with them.
Right.
If there's a lot of bait fish in the water and they're jumping around and it's obvious that something's feeding on them, get out of the water.
Right.
If you see a large shark, which we often do, you see a large shark swimming up to you, get out of the water, you know. I had customers on a charter one day, and I had to go get a leader for this guy, and there was two big sharks right in front of him, and I told him, I said, don't y'all let them sharks get too close. And I got 20 yards from him, and he hollers, is 4 feet too close? And I went, oh, my God, what's up with that? And about that time, his wife was fighting a 20-pound Jack Crevel, and a black tip bit it in half right in front of her.
Ooh.
And knocked her down in the water.
Holy.
And I thought it had ate her, you know.
Yeah.
And I was especially worried because it wasn't a prepaid charter. And so I don't know how I was going to handle that, you know, in a real personable manner. But, you know, people... Florida has all those shark bites, but they go right there where those sharks are. They know those sharks are migrating through there. They do it every year, and they go right there, and then their kids get bit.
Right.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Our kids don't do this. Up here around town where there's a lot of people, that's where there's a lot of people. When you get down in the area I work in on the National Seashore, it's isolated. It's more natural. Those fish are in a natural hunt mode, and the visitors are more cognizant of the sharks and the potential danger, and people don't mess around out there and do stupid stuff.
Well, what do you think is the most common shark? Is it the bull shark or the black tip in your area?
Oh, black tip.
Oh, really?
Black tip. Probably Atlantic shark nose, which is a smaller shark with a opaque white spots on him and just smells. It's real strong with urea, but are the medium-sized ones, it's a lesser black tip.
No.
And they jump and are good to eat, and they bite people occasionally. And you know one of the most interesting things about shark attacks?
What?
Most of what I can read in the United States is the average person that gets hit by a shark is a female who's in her menstruational period.
Well, that would make sense.
Well, let's walk out there with a bucket of blood and see if anybody's home.
Right.
I mean,
kinda like
come on.
That's like ringing the dinner bell.
I mean, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a female, and I wouldn't go into bear country if it was that time of the month.
Well,
you know,
no.
Basic common sense here, people.
Yeah, and you know, I'm 63 years old, and I'll walk right up, and I'll tell if there's a lot of sharks, I'll tell a female customer, ma'am, if you're on your period, you need to be extremely careful.
Right.
Because I'm not doing my job if I don't tell her.
Well, I mean, do you think there's an overall, I hate to use the word ignorance, but, you know, a lack of knowledge when it comes to animals in the water and how they should behave? I mean, or do they just think it's just all playtime and it's not going to happen to them?
Exactly.
Oh.
Did you ever see the one down in Rio de Janeiro or somewhere where the kid stuck the popsicle in the bottlenose dolphin's breather hole and the dolphin killed him?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. These two guys were drunk. And this dolphin was playing because they're used to people, and they're out there playing with the dolphin. And this one guy had this popsicle and kept shoving it down that dolphin's breathe hole, and that dolphin reared back and knocked the living heck out of him and broke his neck and killed him dead in hell.
Oh, my God.
Now, I mean, you know, whose fault's that?
Parents.
Sure it is. Sure it is. And so, you know, these are instinctive creatures, and when you send them certain signals, they're going to respond accordingly.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm not especially afraid of them. I have a great deal of respect for them, and I do what I'm doing, and then I get out of the water with them, you know. It's theirs, it's not mine.
Right.
So.
So here's another question, going back to an earlier topic. When do you get back to work with the Ridley Sea Turtle again, or is that time of the year done?
Mm-mm. It's just fixing to kick off. Last year they found the first one on the 22nd of April, and they'll find them into early July. And so it's coming right on top of us right now. And all I did... I'm down there. I've been down there longer than anybody. And so I know how to see them. You know, just you see things every day. If it looks like a duck, it's probably a duck. If it's waddling up on the beach, it's probably a turtle. So I'm considered, I've been to their schools and training and stuff. And I'm considered a turtle technician. And they have a entire group, flotilla of UTV vehicles with turtle technicians that will drive up and down that beach from daylight to dark, trying to catch that turtle in the process of laying out their eggs during the daytime. That's the only turtle that nests in the daytime. That turtle spends a maximum of 45 minutes on a beach. And what they want to do is run some blood work, see if there's any problems with the turtle, see if it's one that was bred, that was hatched there, or is wild stock. And then they will take those eggs, dig them up, take them to a hatchery up at headquarters, and hatch them out in 46 days.
Wow.
Pretty cool. Be about 110 per nest.
Uh-huh.
Man, so, but every seagull in town is trying to get one, you know.
Well, will you be asking for volunteers when they start to nest, or?
Oh, no. All I do, I'm a fishing guide.
Okay.
That's all I do. I'm a fishing guide and a naturalist, and any way we can help them, we do. But they have a sea turtle recovery program. Dr. Donna Shaver.
Yeah.
Is in charge of it, and if they'll go online and just hit Sea Turtle Recovery Program or PINS, which is PINS, Sea Turtle or something like that, they can get all kind of information on it. It is cool.
Well, you know, I've never spoken with anybody who's been in the fishing industry doing tours and things like that who's had such a great love for the animals that he's actually out there with all the time. And I can't even thank you enough for agreeing to be on the program with me tonight. It's been very informative.
It's a pleasure.
I've really learned a lot from you tonight.
Well, I hope that they get bond up for Larry and he's not gone too long. and it was my pleasure, ma'am.
Well, so what did you think of the show tonight, Mr. Day?
Well, like I said, Billy will never be at a loss for words. It was a great show, and I hope he gets his oars back in the water. Get that motor fixed, Billy.
Yeah.
It better happen pretty quick, or or I'm going to be standing out here on the side of the road with a sign that says, "We'll fight or fish for food." Well, the very best to y'all.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind you again that next week we're going to have on our program Mr. David Klinger. He's a writer with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And don't forget to check out Larry's website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Once again, thank you so much, Mr. Sandifer, for agreeing to be on the program tonight. And I really hope that you'd agree to come back on again with Larry and Dr. Day and myself, because it's always great having you around.
I'm used to you all now.
Oh, you are, huh?
Yeah, it takes me a while.
So we can't surprise you with anything?
Well, probably not, you know, but I can probably surprise you with something.
Hey, we're always looking forward to that.
I got more practice at it.
Hey, that's
cool. Y'all be good.
You too.
Thank you, Captain.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget to turn in again next week. We look forward to talking to you. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.